Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Bill Henry speaking to you from the floor of the House of Representatives, where a joint session of the House and the Senate is about to hear a message from President Roosevelt. There's an enormous capacity crowd here. I've only just a moment in which to tell you something of what's going on. The members of the Senate have just come in. The members of the Cabinet came in just a moment ago. The committee of escort is now entering the room, and the President is entering.
Mr. Speaker.
And Mr. McCormick are standing directly in front of an American flag. Now, as the applause dies away, you hear John McCormick.
Senators and representatives, I have the great pleasure, the high privilege, and the distinguished honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Speaker, members of the Congress, I hope that you will pardon me for an unusual posture of sitting down during the presentation of what I want to say, but I know that you will realize that it makes it a lot easier for me in not having to carry about 10 pounds of steel around on the bottom of my legs, and also because of the fact that I have just completed a 14,000-mile trip. First of all, I want to say it's good to be home. It's been a long journey, and I hope you'll also agree that it has been, so far, a fruitful one. Speaking in all frankness, the question of whether it is entirely fruitful or not lies to a great extent in your hands. For unless you are here, you here in the halls of the American Congress, with the support of the American people, concur in the general conclusions reached at a place called Yalta, and give them your active support, the meeting will not have produced lasting results. And that is why I have come before you at the earliest hour I could after my return. I want to make a personal report to you, and at the same time to the people of the country. Many months of earnest work are ahead of us all, and I should like to feel that when the last stone is laid on the structure of international peace, it will be an achievement for which all of us in America have worked steadfastly and unselfishly together. I'm returning from this trip that took me so far, refreshed and inspired. I was well the entire time. I was not ill for a second until I arrived back in Washington. And there I heard all of the rumors which had occurred in my absence. Yes, I returned from the trip refreshed and inspired. The Roosevelts are not, as you may suspect, averse to travel. We seem to thrive on it. And far away as I was kept constantly informed of affairs in the United States. The modern miracles of rapid communication have made this world very small. We must always bear in mind that fact when we speak or think of international relations. I received a steady stream of messages from Washington. I might say from not only the executive branch with all its departments, but also from the legislative branch in its two departments. And except where radio silence was necessary for security purposes, I could continuously send messages any place in the world. And, of course, in a grave emergency, we could have even risked the breaking of the security rules. I come from the Crimea Conference with a firm belief that we have made a good start on the road to a world of peace. There were two main purposes in this Crimea Conference. The first was to bring defeat to Germany with the greatest possible speed and the smallest possible loss of Allied men. That purpose is now being carried out in great force. The German army and the German people are feeling the ever-increasing might of our fighting men and of the Allied armies, and every hour gives us added pride in the heroic evidence of the heroic advance of our troops in Germany on German soil toward a meeting with the gallant Red Army. The second purpose was to continue to build the foundation for an international accord that would bring order and security after the chaos of the war, that would give some assurance of lasting peace among nations of the world. That goal, too, in that goal, toward that goal, a tremendous stride was made. At Tehran, a little over a year ago, there were long-range military plans laid by the chiefs of staff of the three most powerful nations. Among the civilian leaders of Tehran, however, at that time, there were only exchanges of views and expressions of opinion. No political arrangements were made, and none was attempted. At the Crimea Conference, however, the time had come for getting down to specific cases in the political field. There was on all sides at this conference an enthusiastic effort to reach an agreement. Since the time of Tehran, a year ago, there had developed among all of us a greater facility in negotiating with each other that augurs well for the peace of the world. We know each other better. I have never for an instant wavered in my belief that an agreement to ensure world peace and security can be reached. There were a number of things that we did that were concrete, that were definite. For instance, the lapse of time between Tehran and Yalta, without conferences of representatives, of civilian representatives, of the three major powers, has proved to be too long. 14 months. During that long period, local problems were permitted to become acute in places like Poland and Greece and Italy and Yugoslavia. Therefore, we decided at Yalta that even if circumstances made it impossible for the heads of the three governments to do it, to meet more often in the future, we would make that sure by arranging that there would be frequent personal contacts for the exchange of views between the secretaries of state, the foreign ministers of these three powers. We arranged for periodic meetings at intervals of 3 or 4 months. And I feel very confident that under this arrangement, there will be no recurrences of the incidences which this winter disturbed the friends of worldwide cooperation and collaboration. When we met at Yalta, in addition to laying our strategic and tactical plans for the final military victory over Germany, there were other problems of vital political consequence. For instance, first were the problems of the occupation and control of Germany after victory, the complete destruction of her military power, and the assurance that neither the Nazis nor Prussian militarism could again be revived to threaten the peace and the civilization of the world.